Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the CX Goalkeeper podcast. Your host, Greg, will have smart discussions with friends, experts, and thought leaders on customer experience, transformation, and leadership. Please follow this podcast on your preferred platform. I am sure you will enjoy the next episode with the guest I selected for you. Today, I am sharing a discussion with Michael Brandt that we had together for the Customer Experience Professional Association in Switzerland. It's all about employee engagement, employee experience, and I think it's worth it to reshare it on the CX Goalkeeper podcast. Thank you very much to the CXPA Switzerland to allowing that. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the CXPA Switzerland Apero or Aperitif. Today, it's only two of us. It's Michael and me. Hi, Michael. How are you?
Hi, Greg. I'm fine. How are you?
Very well. Thank you very much.
Good, good.
You are wearing a hat. What's written on your hat?
Oh, my hat shows that I'm founder member of the Grumpy Old Man's Club, and I'm only happy if I'm complaining, you see. Oh, so
the perfect role in customer experience, if you complain.
Exactly. There you go. That's right.
No, thank you very much. I was thinking today to speak a bit about employee experience. You have an extensive experience also with in a corporate world, but also as solopreneur and then in collaboration also with Lexden. To kick off the discussion in a very simple way, customer first or employee first?
That's a really good question. You know, I remember there was, I think it was Virgin Atlantic or Northwest Airlines. It was an airline that made a big advertisement and said, you know, we put our employees first, because if we put our employees first, they'll look after you. Not absolutely sure about that. I think in many cases it works, but I think, you know, we still have to look for the customer. We have to look after staff, but we have to have the customer focus.
We discussed this topic also with my former employer, and then we came to the point that yes, we can say employee first, but then we changed that to engaged employee drives to satisfied customer. Because if your employees are not engaged, are not happy, they are not delivering. And it's not only about contact center, it's not only about marketing, but it's also the guy working in the controlling department or the guy working in the risk department that are trying to keep in mind what they are doing. And they need to deliver in order to enable all the other people there.
Absolutely.
Perhaps, do you have some... Sorry, go for it.
No, I was going to say, you know, I saw quite a while back, it was a study by a gentleman who does a lot about NPS, actually. He's called Maurice, but I've forgotten his second name. Anyway, he did a study several years ago, and he showed that there was no correlation between employee satisfaction and customer satisfaction. But then a few years later, he published an update. He said, actually, that was wrong. And it depended very much on the industry, right? So if you have an industry where there's a very intensive interaction between staff and customers, then employee satisfaction and employee engagement has a much bigger effect on customer satisfaction than it would in an industry where there are very few actual touch points. And I think that's probably true. I think if you're looking, let's say, hospitality or travel, you know, where there's a lot of contact between staff on the front line and customers, then I think it's important that the employees feel engaged, identify with their company. But if you were going to look at one of the companies which is often cited as one of the great examples for customer experience, which is Amazon, right? If you look at employee satisfaction in the warehouse or things like that, I'm not sure you're going to see so many smiling faces. Right. So, and yet people are still very happy with Amazon. The thing is, there's very, very little actual human contact between staff and customers at Amazon. And so I think that, you know, looking at those examples, I think that, you know, the study was actually probably correct. It depends very much on the industry.
But I think, as usual, in all fields that we are discussing, the context is relevant to understand what it really means. And now I think it's a moment to celebrate, because we have also a comment. When we are the four of us, we never receive a comment. Only the two of us can create more engagement around what we are discussing. Perhaps it's the topic, or perhaps it's the two of us that are doing this discussion in a very interesting way. Joke aside, thank you very much to Bunyamin Kankrili. Sorry if I pronounce your name not in the proper way. He's saying, take care of your employees so much so that they all put the client first. So really, both groups are critical for slightly different reasons. We agree for you, and I think you summarize in a pretty good way what we were discussing. But basically, we all agree that we need satisfied, engaged, happy employees, and not only happy customer, to drive the company, to try to achieve the mission and the vision of the company. Perhaps do you have examples or techniques that you used with your team, so that you learned in the past, to enhance employee engagement?
Sure. Yeah, I think, you know, one of the things that I always did was to involve staff in decisions, right? It depends on, obviously, on what you're doing. At the time, I was responsible for, or I was product owner for an important application within ABB for complaint management, but also for voice of the customer. And I had two different development teams. And I made sure that they were very aware of the feedback that we were getting from our users, so within the company. And we would always sit down and discuss what the solutions were. Right. We'd get the developers in, we'd get the business analyst in, tech lead, everybody would be in there, and we'd say, okay, this is the problem. What's the solution? Right. And we would discuss it. I would say the majority of times it wasn't my idea that we ended up putting into place. Right. And so people felt that what they said, their opinion was important and it was recognized, you know, and I think that's, you know, the really important thing. And I think it's also important to give positive feedback when it's appropriate. And that doesn't necessarily mean a bonus or anything like that, but it just means going up to somebody and say, you know, that was a really good job. It worked out really well. Great idea. You know, look how successful that was, you know, and a pat on the back. And I think, you know, that's important. It's important also because it means when you have criticism, it's also easier to accept, right? So if you want to say to somebody, look, you know, not so good this time, right? You know, then I think that's also important. If you're happy to dish out the positives, and from time to time, you also have to dish out a negative, it's easier to, you know, to accept, I think. So it's important to be fair and, you know, yeah.
You mentioned some points building up on what you said. Feedback positive. I know it's not the right way to explain it, but it's negative feedback. And also my personal experience, yes, positive feedback helps and it's supportive and so on. But if leaders are always only sharing positive feedback, then at some point in time, people start thinking, okay, but there is for sure also topics that I should work on or something, because I'm not a machine. Also myself, I'm not a machine. There are a few things there are some things that I could improve, few things that perhaps I didn't do well. And I think that it's extremely important to find positive way to explain also what didn't go well. And absolutely. And there, my personal experiences with candor, with kindness, and so on, if you explain that to the others, they will get that. The first reaction is always very defensive. Ah, no, it was not me. You misunderstood and so on. But in my view, people start getting more reflexive and reflecting on what they did, and every feedback counts and help. Did you perhaps at also such a situation in your career?
Well, a situation where I got
that you got, let's say, an feedback to improve, where you can improve?
Yes. Oh, absolutely. And it was very funny because, you know, at ABB, we used to have this 360. So we used to have this opportunity given to staff every year to basically evaluate their superiors, right? Their supervisors. And yeah, I remember one year, you know, the team, there was something that I'd been doing, which they didn't like, and they told me about it. And I said, okay, yeah, I understand that. I see that. Okay. You know, I've got to change that, right? It's, you know, justified criticism. And I think, you know, one of the important things with the team that I was talking about before, one year I made a decision. I said, okay, this is what we're going to do based on the discussion. Right? This is what we're going to do. And it turned out that that was actually a very bad decision, right? It didn't work out the way that I expected. And the following year when we were looking at it, you know, I stood up and said, look, this was my call and I screwed up. How are we going to fix it? Right. And I think that's another thing. I think that, you know, I think staff are generally, if a supervisor is also willing to accept responsibility for their own mistakes, then I think it also increases the credibility and the bond between the team, because they feel, okay, he realizes they're not perfect too. They can also make mistakes. And I think that's important. It increases the trust level. So
yes, you are really right, and I think that's the next level, being able and also feeling comfortable to share positive and negative feedback. It's the next level, because it's always easy to say thank you, you did a great job, but also helping others to grow, it's part of leadership task, and it's important to continue. Perhaps we spoke a lot about internal topics, feedback involving staff in the decisioning process. Another thing that it's, how is it possible? How can we maintain our employees, our co-workers motivated to work in a company? And here I'm also trying to relate a bit more to, I don't know, in the old-fashioned way is work-life balance, but I think in the meantime, it's more work-life integration or something like that. Yeah. What's your view?
I think that when you're dealing with staff, I think it's, we can use to a certain extent the same principles that we use for customers, right? We need to find, just like we need to find out what are the requirements, what are the needs our customers have, we need to find out from our staff what their needs and requirements are, right? You know, because not everybody ticks the same way. Each of us, just like our customers, each staff member has their own priorities, their own needs, right? You know, you have, you know, people who are single, people who are married with larger families, you know, there's the whole range, and each of them have different priorities. So I think it's necessary to try and find out. And I don't necessarily mean, you know, yeah, we all want more money. Of course, who doesn't want more money, right? It always helps. But I'm talking about things that are, let's say, talk about the Maslow pyramid, right? Something like that. More about, you know, what are the important things for me? And I found, in my experience, many companies are reluctant to do that research because they, you know, I've heard several times, yes, but if we do that, then we will raise expectations. You know, our staff will actually expect us to do something. Yeah, okay. Well, I think that's probably right. Yes, you know, if you ask, you know, what is it that you really need? What are your priorities? And they tell you that yes, of course, you know, you'd probably be expected to do something about it. Just like in customer experience, you go out and ask your customers. You know, you do the voice of customer survey, however it is. You get feedback. Yes, you're expected to do something about it. You're not expected to ignore it, right? So I think some companies still need to jump over their shadow, as we say in German, right? And figure out that, yes, okay, if you ask your staff, you know, what are their priorities, then you might have to, you know, rejig your strategy when it comes to staff.
And what you're saying, asking the employees, trying to understand them, there is a lot of discussion in companies, and we know that perhaps I don't know, 5 years ago, 10 years ago, there was this staff survey every third year. And it was a big survey with 80 questions and so on. And perhaps also sharing my personal experience in the hospital where I'm working, we did that every third year asking 80 questions. I want to be honest, the management got the results 3 months later. And then until we discussed everything was 6 months later and everything changed in the meantime. And we moved to a very simple way to ask feedback on a quarter basis or some in some department every 6 months. And this, and I'm not, I know that you are aware of, but also for the audience, it's not about which metrics you're measuring, but we ask only two questions. One is qualitative and one is quantitative. We decided to go for the NPS. It can be employees. You're now satisfied. Are you with this and that? But what we find out is asking this question regularly, first of all, give the opportunity to the employees to get rid of stuff that they want to say and they cannot say because it's anonymous feedback if they want to give that in an anonymous way. And by leveraging whatever tool is available, to evaluate these qualitative feedbacks or the open text answer, you can find out quite a lot. And that was really interesting because then you start learning and understanding, yes, there are always the same people complaining about salary. Everybody wants to get a bit more for the same job. It's clear, but it's a bit difficult from a company point of view. But for example, for us, what we find out in the team I'm working, it was the topic around feedback. We are giving us only positive feedback. And therefore, we had a discussion with our colleagues about how can we discuss also about improvement in a positive way, in a way that it's really improving the quality of the work and not to your point saying you are bad and you did this and that wrong. And this is incredible. And based also on all this feedback, at some point in time, you start to feeling that it's not anymore the old-fashioned way of doing business. I'll pay you a salary and therefore you need to work. But what people really like is the flexibility. They have the flexibility, the opportunity, as you said at the beginning, to be part of this decisioning process, but not taking the most strategic decision, but also sharing ideas how to implement, how to solve customer issues, internal issues. And I think this is very nice. And I know that you're an expert in this topic. We also started creating employee journeys,
right?
And we found out some interesting stuff. Perhaps do you have also an example about that?
Not necessarily employee journeys direct, but I was really impressed during my time at ABB that we had an NPS survey, which for our customers, but it was the HR department first that came to me and said we'd like to do an internal NPS. And I was like, okay, what about, but it's a staff survey. No, we don't want to do a staff survey. But what we want to do a survey on HR processes, which are also, let's face it, HR processes are also really important when it comes to staff satisfaction. If you're talking about payroll, for instance, is probably the most important one, right? And we said, okay, fine. There were various touch points that the users could comment on and give verbatim feedback. And the first year, the results were shocking, right? I think it was an NPS score of something like minus 30, right? And the HR department, they were suffering from shock. But they got their act together really quickly. They put out a communication acknowledging the problems. And they put out a list of things they were going to fix, and they did. And the following year, the result was high. It was better. The comments were better. And within 4 years, they had gone from minus 30 to something like plus 40. And they had done so much for their own reputation within the company. These processes that they hadn't really realized were not working that well, or they hadn't seen the extent. They really got their act together in fixing these, and the staff and the management acknowledged this. They said, no, these things are now really working. And I think it was a really best practice, a textbook example of how to manage these kind of feedback method. So it wasn't directly the employee journey, but it was probably a lot of, it, let's say it wasn't consciously done along the employee journey, but it covered a lot of points along the employee journey. And so, you know, led to a significant improvement.
But also in this case, I use the word employee journey, but at the end, it's exactly the same and it doesn't need to be depicted on a wall. And this is the journey, but it's based on the needs of the employees. They started improving at in different places. And what I really think it's key, it's also this opportunity to measure the progress. Are we getting better and better?
Absolutely.
If you allow me, one example, we did that with the journey. It's a bit special journey because it's in the recruiting process. And it was interesting because we started building up a team. And then we were really hands-on and we said, okay, let's start. One, for example, we do one interview with the line manager and we do an exchange with the team. And then we said, but for the person that comes to the interview, it could be interesting to speak also with another line manager and to speak with the department head. And then at the end, were four meetings. And then we did some surveys after the process. And independently, if we hired the person or not, they said, the process seems too complex or the entry level is too high because we have four interviews. And we said, no, from our point of view, the interviews are always due. And you have additional opportunity to discuss with the team and to understand better the team and to get coffee with the team. And he said, from our point of view, as job seekers, are four interviews because we need to prepare. The level of emotion is very high and so on. And therefore, we changed the process again back to only two interviews, but with the opportunity to meet more people during the same same. And this was really, really, really interesting to get this learning. And one second learning that I think can be also relevant for the audience is nowadays, if you publish one open position, you get hundreds of CVs. And then sometimes machine are going through these CVs, sometimes it's the HR department going through. And then as a line manager, you get, I don't know, 10, 15 CVs. And you don't have the time to interview all these people. And therefore, you need to select. And what we found out was that the people that were declined were informed promptly. Mm-hmm. Because you have a list of 10, you say this, I want to see this and that. And the other 7, you can cancel that. And they were informed quite quickly. But the time that we had between getting all this list and then approaching for the first time the three candidates that were selected was more than 1 week. And these candidates were all thinking, yeah, they don't want me because if they would like to have a discussion with me, maximum 3 days. And therefore, based on the feedback that we got from the candidates, we decided to reduce this process. And before declining all others, focusing, okay, these are the three that I want to see, let's call them and fix the meetings. Mm-hmm. Because they wanted to be involved in the process and understand the timeline. And these were two interesting, very simple to implement feedbacks that we got among others that helped us.
True. Perhaps that's good.
We spoke about our personal experiences, but I know that you are reading a lot, that you are giving courses. It means you are also with companies. Do you have some example, real world example, case studies or insights that you want to share? You can share that you say, oh, I saw or I read about this company. They're doing this and that in the employee engagement space, and it totally makes sense.
Look, I think one of the cases that we've seen, one of the things that we've seen a lot recently, and it's not just one company, it's been several, but this doesn't necessarily do anything for the reputation of a company. And that is when you get, and of course, nowadays with social media, people very often they take these things, right? You know, they make a film about it or, you know, when you get, you know, 20 people invited to a Zoom call to be told that they've been fired, right? And things like that. This is just not the way to do things, right? I mean, and you know, if a company, you know, gets put on social media because this is how they treat their staff, good luck with trying to find good candidates. I mean, there are a lot of people out there looking for a job, so I'm sure that they would probably be able to find somebody, right? As you said, you post an open position, now you get hundreds of applications, right? But the really good people, are they going to apply to a company that has a reputation for treating staff like that? I seriously have my doubts, right? And I think this is one of the things where, you know, maybe some companies take a very short term approach by saying, I don't need these people. It doesn't really matter how I treat them because I'm never going to see them again, right? And yes, you might not. But on the other hand, you know, you just need someone to record this, put it out on social media, and then it goes viral, and you have your proverbial, as they call it, shitstorm, right? So that's how it goes. So I think nowadays, because communication, you know, with social media is so much easier than it was 20, 30 years ago, right? And these kind of incidents get a global airing very quickly. Companies really need to think about how they treat their staff and to maintain, I would say, a basic level of human decency. And because I think that's what it amounts to. It's a very basic level of human decency. And that I think some companies still need to learn.
As usual. In the meantime, thank you, Luis Rodrigo, for your feedback. I really appreciate that you find time to step by also here, even if you are running the customer experience war games, and we know that you are extremely busy ensuring that everything's work properly. We all support the customer experience war game. It's great what you're doing, and it's a big opportunity for all of us supporting this outstanding game. Means teams are working on challenges to support charities and NGOs, creating concepts that these companies, these charities, NGOs can then leverage to improve their what they are doing.
Yeah, absolutely.
Michael, we are coming to an end, but perhaps still a few practical tips, ideas, hints that companies can implement quite quickly in companies without having big investment from a monetary point of view or from a technical point of view. What are the top three from your point of view?
I would say, first of all, don't be afraid to talk to your staff, and, you know, get over yourself, get over the idea that, you know, the only thing staff are going to say is we want more money. That's not always the way it works. Find out really what their aspirations are and see what you can do that. I would say, secondly, treat your staff with decency, right? Treat them like you would want to be treated yourself, you know, with politeness, courtesy, and some empathy, right? I think that's important. And finally, give your staff an environment that they can be proud of, right? I think, and identify with. And again, this comes back to asking staff, you know, what's important to them. But I think there are companies there that really do a good job in that respect. And it doesn't always cost a lot of money. Sometimes it just takes thought and, you know, how to do it. You know, thinking outside the box a little bit and talking to your staff. So I think those are really, from my perspective, three most important things that one could do, you know, quick wins.
Thank you very much, Michael. We are coming to an end of this discussion. As usual, it was great to have you on. Thank you very much, Michael, for your time.
Thank you, Greg.
We hope that the audience enjoyed this discussion. A short reminder for the people living in Zurich, the 25th of June, we are going to have a meeting together, an event together with Colnet, and we will be in Zurich, where you can find the invitation link in our 6PA Switzerland post tagline. You will find us all the information there. It will be an outstanding event, having Federico Cesconi also speaking with us. Thank you very much, and bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
If you enjoyed this episode, please share the word of mouth. Subscribe it, share it. Until the next episode, please don't forget, we are not in a B2B or B2C business. We are in a human-to-human environment. Thank you.